Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Sabbe sattā marantica maring succa marissare tate vahang marissami nati me eta sang sayoti. That chant, which we chant in the death chants, all beings will die. I'm of nature to die. I've got no doubt about that. Just obviously went to a funeral today, this morning, and the practice of recollection of death is one of the great meditations. I'm going to be talking about that this evening, but also to take it a little bit deeper, to take it on another angle which you probably haven't heard before. But certainly just to see just the nature of death happen at any time, at any person, and at any occasion. And because of that, it means that we don't carry around all the stupid negative stuff in our mind, which can occupy our time to the exclusion of practicing the Dhamma and getting out of this problem. And the problem is just old age, sickness and death. And the fact that when you die, you don't know where you're going to get reborn. And the Buddha's very famous and terrifying, if you haven't got your act together, simile of the stick. He said the stick is thrown up in the air and it's not certain which end it will land on. In the same way that each one of you has done a mass of good karma and a mass of bad karma as well. Those are the two ends of the stick called your stream of consciousness. And at the time of death, it's like that good karma and bad karma is tossed up in the air, like a coin being flipped. Is it going to come up heads or tails? The good karma, is that going to come to fruition or the bad karma come to fruition? And of course, the heavier side is more likely to come to fruition. In other words, if one's made a lot of good karma, then that's likely to come to fruition, but not always. And if one's made lots of bad karma, that's likely to come to fruition, but not always. But the point is, each one of you has got mostly good karma, even the worst of the members of this monastery, just because you're keeping really good precepts. Compared to the world, you're the cream. But, nevertheless, at the time of death, we've each done some bad karma sometime in our life. When you think of the bad karma you have done, that might come to fruition at the time of your death and send you to a lower realm. So it's scary, this thing about death. And are you ready to die tonight? What that really does, it gives us a sense of urgency. And what it also does, it gets rid of a lot of stupid stuff which we carry around in our heads. And if you were going to die tonight, you know, why would you be carrying around these feelings for this monk or that monk, or this layperson or that layperson, whether they're positive feelings or negative feelings? Why would you be planning your trips overseas, or what you're going to do next, or remembering your past? Too often we waste our time, because we think that we've got so much time left in the future. But whenever you go to a funeral service, and I've been to quite a few in my time, you just see just how uncertain it all is and how people can die so quickly. When I was in Malaysia, this lady came and she was just devastated because her husband, who had graduated from the same university I went to in Cambridge, with honours first class in engineering, came back to Malaysia, started a company, was doing really, really well. He was going to one of his projects at a building site in Bangkok, and as they drove past, a slab of concrete fell from the building site on top of the car, crushed him to death. His wife was okay. Just literally like being hit by a falling piano, and it was concrete. And just so sudden. 1 minute, she was sitting next to him and talking, the next minute, smash, and his life was gone. And you don't know what's going to happen next. There's just an example of what might happen. So if you really, really, really get into the death meditations, the fact that, you know, this is the truth, one thing you can rely upon. You don't need to sort of have deep insight into dependent origination or experience of jhanas to know that much. That's obvious, but we keep forgetting it. And if you remember that, it gives you the urgency. I know that I keep on sort of saying to do nothing, to just to keep this sense of not interfering with the process, but sometimes that means one has a lack of incentive, a lack of motive to actually to really get in there and to sit down and allow the mind to stop. And instead that one can invest so much of one's energy into thinking, into planning, into complaining or whatever else you do inside your mind when you're supposed to be sitting or however you spend your day. But every now and again that you can recall just how ephemeral this life is. And that's something worth practicing. Because it's truth and it's going to happen. You don't know when. But more than that, the angle which I wanted to expound upon this evening, the deeper angle, is that are you ready to die? Do you know what you're doing? So that when you die, you can at least guide the stream of consciousness into a good rebirth, or even better, to stop it getting reborn. Because at the time you die, at that moment when the sort of the five senses start to turn off, now what would you be your reaction? Now usually most people, the ordinary people, as soon as that dying process happens, they go and create this mind-made body with almost what you might call pseudo-senses. Just, it's like sort of you're seeing, it's like you're hearing, it's like you're feeling. This is just mind-made. And you can see the reason why people make that mind-made body at the time when their natural body just disappears. And it's just because that they just don't know any different and they can't imagine or even accept a world which hasn't got those senses. That just out of that craving, we create that mind-made body. We just need it, we have to give ourselves a sense of understanding, meaning, comfort. And if you start doing that mind-made body, which will just go and take you to just, you know, the human realms or the lower realms eventually, because one is still caught up, attached, identified with those five senses and with having a body, you can see just how that mind creates its future. And you have to be very, very careful there, because it's not just creating a body. It's just creating the intentions, the emotions, the mental stuff which goes with the package called our body. And so many people have their psychological hang-ups, whether it's anger, resentment, the lack of forgiveness to themselves or others. And that's a scary thing to take with you into the death process. If that's the way your mind is now, or if that just happens regularly, you know, in your daily life, it's likely to happen at the time of your death. And if you get into anger or ill will at the time of your death, it doesn't matter if you're a monk and you've been practicing the precepts well, that one moment of anger and ill will, because someone says something stupid to you, or you remember that, at that moment, you go to a lower realm. Very often, angry people go to hell realms. And don't think those realms don't exist. They do. You create them. And at the time of your death, the mind is so subtle, because you're creating subtle bodies, and you can create just this very painful, burning body, if you're not careful, and letting go of the anger now while you have the chance to practice and to get these diseases out of your system. Because if you don't, when the time comes, you're in big trouble. Or if it's like the self-doubt, thinking you ain't good enough, or you're feeling guilty about something which you've done, you can't let go of the past. You're going to carry that karma around with you into death too. You know, again, going to lower realms. And these are real problems you're going to face. These are problems you're going to face for years and years, hundreds of years, centuries sometimes at the time of your death. So you better get your act together now, because these tendencies of the mind, the nature, the reactions, the habits of the mind, they're the ones that can so easily come up at the time of your death. If those are habits are constant now, when that stick gets thrown up, that's what's going to come down. And you're going to get into negativity, blaming, being a victim. And if you think you're a victim now, my goodness, you're going to be a victim big time when you die. So because of this, it gives us an even greater urgency to cultivate the mind, to purify the mind, to make it sort of bright, forgiving, compassionate, peaceful. All these words, which is to let go of all that stupid stuff. Because all anger, what is it? Just anger about the past. Someone said something to me, they did this or whatever. My goodness, just throw that stuff away. That shit. Don't carry it around on your fingers. You wash it off. Whenever you go to the toilet and you brush your, or you wipe your backside and you get some brown stuff on it, you don't carry it around with you. It stinks. Wash it off with soap and water and make sure it's all gone. That's what anger does to your mind, to your jitter. It's like, you know, putting excrement on your jitter. And I can't see why people just carry that around. Now in this life, you know, okay, it's not such a big deal. It doesn't hurt you too much compared to what happens if you carry that around when you die. Because that last mind moment, that state, that drives you. And because of the subtle states, the mind-made bodies, even the hell realms, you get mind-made bodies down there. Coarse ones, but they're mind-made. Because they're mind-made, they're far more stable than this human body. They're made up of the elements. So you experience those states for longer periods of time. So because of that, it becomes imperative to, for the coarser defilements which we have, especially anger and ill will, whether it's to someone else or to ourselves, and the lack of self-esteem, the doubt, thinking I'm not good enough. Why do you think like that? It's only because you may have made a few mistakes in the past and you judge yourself and you don't allow yourself to let go. That will also send you into hell realms. You think you don't deserve to be happy. So like the doors to heavenly realms or the doors to bliss states are open to you, but you don't want to take them. I got a letter from a monk in Sri Lanka recently, because he heard I was going to go over there in the end of January and February. And he said something really interesting, that in his monastery they were practicing jhanas, and many Western monks, many Sri Lankan monks, and he said that a lot of the Sri Lankan monks were getting the jhanas, but very few of the Western monks. It's interesting. So why? What's that? Why is it these Western monks, the same teacher, the same place, the same food, the same situation, why do the Western monks have a harder time? You can see why. It's a negativity which Westerners tend to carry, much more so than the Asians. I know this is a generalization, but it's true. We're just such fault finders. I don't know, it's our culture, it's always so negative, whether it's in the newspapers, the way we talk. We just have to listen to the way people use their speech. Always finding fault, looking for fault, and cultivating that fault-finding mind. Remember that time years ago, going into town on a bus, and just sitting behind people. I remember going on in a train from Armadale into Perth, and then getting a bus from Perth to Nollamara to give the Friday night talk, and sitting behind this couple. They bought a second-hand car, and it was a dud. And throughout it's about 45-50 minute journey, and I was just sitting in the seat behind them. For those 45-50 minutes, they were talking just about that one thing, about the car. Always negative, every sentence. Can you imagine what that does to a mind? 50 minutes of pure negativity. That's junk food for the mind. No wonder people get cancers and stuff when that's what they feed their mind. It's rubbish. It's excrement. And after a while, just that's how the mind just inclines. And if that's the sort of mind you develop in this life, it's no wonder where you're going to get reborn. Lower realms. So that when we develop a good mind, by body, by speech, even by mind, in public or in private, we always think kind, loving, forgiving thoughts to other people as well as to ourselves. And hopefully I've led by example, just by not being critical to any one of you in this monastery. And sometimes that's very difficult to do, I must admit, but I pretty much hope I'm succeeding that way. Because by example, you see, don't find fault with people. You look at their good qualities, their Buddha nature, or their Bodhisattva nature, whatever you call it. And you can find that, and that's positive. If you look for that good, the mind is inclining towards the good. It's inclining towards the beautiful. It's inclining towards forgiveness. It's inclining towards letting go of problems rather than making more problems. It's inclining towards contentment rather than restlessness. It's a way we have to develop if we're going to just live peacefully in this monastery, let alone living peacefully when we meditate. So these are attitudes we have to practice. If you develop that fault-finding mind, when you die, you find all the faults you like and you send yourself to be an animal or something. Be careful of this. It's not sort of a light matter. You managed to get into this human realm in this life, well done. Some of you may have just fluked it, but at least you're here. So just make sure you make use of this precious human life. So make sure that you really make use of this and develop this positive mind state. You know, there's some people in this world, they're like devas, like these heavenly beings. You know, there's many of these people, they just come to the monastery and they feed us. And they're just so kind to us. And they're so just generous to us. And you think, wow, you know, these are like deva people. They must have come from some heaven realm, and here they are, coming every day, washing up. This is the only place when you invite someone to dinner or to lunch, and they bring the food and they wash up afterwards. No other place does that. And they just do this, and they give a donation as well. A donation for thank you for allowing us to feed you and wash up for you. So it's incredible just what people do for us. When you think like that, these are really beautiful people. And I said, do I deserve that food? My conduct by body, speech and mind. I'm not trying to get into a guilt trip, because that's just more negativity. To say, yeah, I'm going to deserve this food. I'm going to really try harder to let go of any negativity in the mind. Ill will is a kilesa, it's a defilement. It doesn't matter, no ill will is justified in Buddhism. No anger is reasonably the right thing to do. It's all wrong, un-Buddhist, not to be done, not to be encouraged. If you get angry at someone, you've blown it. You've missed the point. So that way we just develop this accepting, beautiful, peaceful mind. It doesn't matter what anyone else does to you, that's their problem. I'm not going to be angry or react to anybody in this monastery, no matter what they do. Well, you can start doing things like that. And of course, I'm not just speaking because, you know, people don't say rotten things to me. You know what's happened to me? Sometimes in the past, people have criticized me, railed at me. You know, even that one time, when somebody put these posters on every car outside of Nolamara on a Friday night, saying, Ajahn Brahm, they use my lay name. Peter Betts has slept with my wife. He's not a real monk. Great fun when you have things like that happen. It's a great test to see, you know, whether you get upset and angry. Because I remember that was a Friday night, Ajahn Jnanadamma was giving the talk, so he rang me up at Saturday morning, and I thought it was just terribly funny. I just laughed my head off. He said, this is serious. This is a real thing. Oh, okay, we'll sort it out next week. So we sorted it out. There's no way I'm going to get angry at things like that. no way am I going to allow anyone to wind me up and to spoil my mind. That's a training I got from someone like Ajahn Chah. You'd pick up the stick. Is the stick heavy? And before you could answer, he'd throw it in the bush. Someone calls you a pig, an animal, or whatever. It doesn't matter what they call you. Throw it in the bush straight away. And then there's no problem. Then you're learning how to let go of these negative states of mind. If you practice that now, well, you've got a chance. When it comes a time to die, you'll have this beautiful ability to let go of any negativity which arises in the mind. Here you won't be having people calling you names, but here you'll have the body torturing you, causing you aches and pains and discomfort like you've never had before. It's not as if like someone just bumps into you or pushes you against things. This is big time pain, the last feelings of the body, before the body crumbles away and cannot support your life anymore. If you can't endure just small things, how can you endure something like the death process? I'd be really impressed to see some of the lay supporters who've got the message, who even though their body is hurting terribly, even though that things are going all wrong, even though that some people would say, it's just so unfair, why me, why does this happen? They don't fight. They don't react with this beautiful loving kindness, peace, letting go. They just allow the process to happen. They flow. They don't do anything. They don't fight. They don't control. They let go. If you've seen anyone and had the privilege to be with someone while they're dying, and you see them fight, that's just so disappointing. It's just so miserable to see someone fighting for the last few breaths. It's scary too. And you think, when that's me, will I be fighting? Will I be this control freak who just cannot let go when it's really necessary? Didn't I have this chance when I was a monk, layperson in the monastery, to practice letting go, not controlling? You did have that chance. You take that opportunity and you do it well now. When that last breath or those last hours of life come, you can really let go. You can really just flow. You don't control, because you've seen this doer, and you can just pacify it and just allow the whole process to go without reacting. Even with pain and difficulties, one doesn't make a fantasy out of it. One doesn't run away from it. And somewhere, I think, in the suttas, I think I remember it, or somewhere, the Buddha said that so many people, they react to suffering or discomfort, pain, just with sensual fantasies. And just as this is a way of just escaping by thinking about sex, plans, memories, romance, or whatever. And if you do that now, when the time comes, when you've got discomfort of death just staring in the face, if that's your habitual reaction to discomfort, to pain, to boredom now, that reaction will be there on the time you die, but your inclination, you start thinking of all these sensual thoughts, you'd end up getting reborn as a dog, or as a rabbit, or as much sex as you like. Is that really what you want? Saw a little poor rabbit today, just crossing the road, just afraid, terrified, simply because there's so many people who want to kill you, shoot you, eat you. It's not a nice life, being an animal. But if that's what you want, that's your fantasies and your reaction to pain, then that's what's going to come up at the time of your death. So you can see the point I'm making here. that it's not as if at the time of your death you can say, right, now I'm going to be reborn in the Tawa Tingsa realm. Oh, no, I'll do the Tusita realm. Oh, Pure Land for me. You haven't got the choice. It's your inclinations. It's the sum of what you've been doing in your whole life. This last thought moment is not free. The last thought moment is the sum total of all of your inclinations. The stick is thrown up. The heaviest end is the most likely to land. And that's how you've been inclining your mind throughout your life. You've been inclining it towards fantasies, towards ill will, towards fault finding. That is what's going to come up. And that's going to decide your rebirth. Scary. If you're really into food, you could probably get reborn as one of these birds in this monastery. Always like looking for something to eat. Be careful. The greedy people, or the hungry ghosts, or the very violent people, the very physically strong, might get reborn as asuras. You can understand all these different realms of existence which the Buddha talked about. You can actually see sometimes, I look at some of the monks in this monastery, because I've been here a while and know a lot of you, I can see, yeah, if you don't really look out, that's where you're going to be reborn. You're being reborn as an asura. You get reborn just as a cat. You get reborn as a sort of a dog. Be careful what you're doing. Because this rebirth is a real thing. But for those of you who want to do much better than that, much better than the heavenly realms, the place to go is in the peaceful, deep states of meditation. I've often said to the lay community during retreats that meditation, the samatha, the path of jhanas, is just the training in how to die. Because you've seen, I've made this connection many times, the death process is a letting go of the body and the five senses, which is exactly the same as the path into jhanas. You even got the nimitta, the light at the end of the tunnel, or whatever people call it when they remember their past life experiences or have out-of-the-body experiences. And because that you got experience on this, that you know that that light is just the first manifestation of the mind when the five senses are quelled. That's what the nimitta is. That's why the nimitta is important. That's why that some people say, oh, these jhanas can still have the five senses. Well, they're missing the point. Five senses are quelled. The body has disappeared. The five senses and the body, they just rest upon each other, just like the two sheaves. I know that's not the way the Buddha used a simile, but that simile is valid. When there's five senses, you find there's a body. When there's a body, there's five senses. Except the dead body, but that's not going to last very long. Five senses keep the body going. The body is there for the five senses to play in the world. If you can't let go of this body and five senses now, how do you reckon you're going to let go of the body and the five senses when you die? You won't be able to. You just create a mind-made body. And because of that, you get reborn. Go to another place. And the whole thing goes all over again. Even if you are a good person and get reborn as a human being, do you really want to wear nappies again? Do you really want to have this dummy, this pacifier, shoved in your mouth by your mummy? Do you really want to go to school all over again? Who knows where it might be next time? World, it's not a safe place. So be careful if you make these bodies. You get reborn again. You have the chance now to let go of this body and these five senses. And that is through the practice of disengagement with the five senses. Disengagement with the five senses of the past and the five senses of the future, present moment awareness, All of the time you start thinking and planning about what's going to happen next. It's all five sense stuff. What you're going to see, where you're going to go, what's going to happen, what you're going to do tomorrow, what you're going to eat, all that sort of stuff. Much of it is like fantasizing about five sense stuff, or dreaming of the past about five sense stuff, or five sense video games, or five sense movies, or five sense, it's all five sense stuff. It's all just there for most of you. If you can't disengage now, you're going to be caught in the five sense worlds. You won't have an opportunity to escape, to be free from those worlds. The time of rebirth, we just keep going. You won't end. And I think many of you are here because you know that samsara sucks. You know that it's painful, it's difficult. You've got a good life here. You are sort of rare people who have got reasonably good health, safe, there's no wars going on. Just heard this morning for Ajahn Jirat and Tuitam, there was a coup in Thailand this morning. Don't know what's happening there, but the tanks are on the street. Let alone in Baghdad, what's happening over there. This is a very uncertain world. So do you really want to keep getting reborn in these places? Who knows where it might be next time? So you have to learn how to let go of this body, disengage from these five senses, to stop the attachment to these things. Otherwise, that you get reborn again in five sense worlds, and it sucks again. You have more pain, more trouble, probably worse next time. This is, of all the human existences, being in such a remote city as Perth, and such a prosperous city, such a healthy city, of all the human places you can live, this is one of the best. Of course, around Munich is not so bad also, for those of you who come from overseas. But this is a pretty nice place. Don't get any terrorists or stuff. But it's not going to last. So because of that, please disengage. When you're meditating, learn how to let go. It's the reason why we do breath meditation, because it's a stepping stone across the river. To let go of the five senses, it's too hard just to stop them straight away unless you're really skilled and know where you're going. So we drop most of the five senses, just keep a tiny bit of one, the feeling of the breath. No seeing, no hearing, no smelling, no tasting. No touch of anything else. That's why we close our eyes. Just feel the breath. Focus until that's all that's there. No past, no future. Just one thing. Surely you guys can do that. If you can't, make that your goal in monastic life. How you do that? A bit of letting go, a bit of metta, changing the process, a bit of walking meditation, whatever. But please make the goal to be able just to watch the breath and to the exclusion of everything else. It's a stepping stone. Because once you're there, it's not that much more to let go of the breath completely. But to get to that one pointedness, just one part of the five senses and the body left, then you can let that go. Imagine if you can do that when you're dying. The physical feelings in the body you can just let go of. The people around you talking this and crying and asking you this and whatever, you can just completely disengage and just watch your breath. What a beautiful release that would be. If you practice now, you'll be able to do that when you die. You find these skillful means, not just through willpower, through the wisdom power. So when I say you shouldn't do anything, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't aspire to be able to watch the breath. It's how you get to watch the breath. That's where the too much control doesn't work. But find those wise means of being able to sustain your attention on this breath by letting go of everything else, letting go of all the other senses, the past, the future, everything, so you've just got the breath left. You're learning the way of disengagement from the body and the five senses. If you can do that now, when you die, you're sweet. Let go of the past and the future, that all this negativity and stuff, what happened to you, who did what, when and how, that will all just be a hosey, just gone, passed away. All fear of the future just doesn't exist. You know how to remain in the present moment. Otherwise, you'll be terrified. Some people, the reason why they struggle so much is because they're terrified of what's going to happen next. Look at some of you, you've gone into deep meditation, you can't go any further because you're afraid. What happens if I just really get into this breath, or if I let go of the breath and a limiter comes up? Why are you afraid when a limiter comes up and you can't maintain it? Gee, what's going to happen when you die? That fear is going to come up again, but even big time. Be careful, train yourself now to overcome these defilements of the mind. Otherwise you'd be reborn as a fearful beings. And the other fearful beings, maybe asuras, or maybe more likely to be animal realms. You can't let go. So you train now. Get onto that breath. So you can just watch it. So training to die properly, well. And see if you can let go of that breath and go into the realm of the mind. If you can do that, you know how to die. When that nimitta, the light comes at your death, you don't just go through it and then just like a ping pong out of it and come back and just get reborn again or get into some temporary heaven realm where you just enjoy sensory pleasure until you get reborn back here again and start all over again. If you learn how to let go of the five senses and the body, and when you die, there's a good chance that you can get reborn in one of the jhana realms. Maybe even get stream winning. Even anagami at the time you die. So many people, it seems, according to the suttas, get these attainments when they die. And if you understand the process of meditation, or if you remember the process of, you know, dying and getting reborn again, it's very obvious why that happens. You get this big invitation to let go. It's like a big doorway. Come on, let go of this body and the five senses. It's really painful. You've got nothing really left to do. It's completely hopeless. All controlling and keeping this five sense and body going. It's wearing away. It's painful. It's a burden. It's just obvious. Now people don't see that so much. And this body, yeah, it's a bit heavy. It's a bit sore. But, you know, it's not that bad. Take a Panadol. It might go away. Yeah, these five senses, you know, it's a bit of a burden, but you never know, you might go and see a movie or read a book or something, that might be okay. The time of your death is so obvious, as it should be now. It's an irritation, it's a weight, it's a burden. If you can do it now, you'll be able to do it when you die. Completely let go. It's that letting go of this thing we identify with. To be able just to renounce it. Throw it away. Nothing to do with me. Not my business, bodies and senses. There's a good chance you can let go enough. Maybe even to become an anagami. Someone who's not attached anymore to the five sense realm. I know people who are stream winners. It's one of the beautiful teachings of the Buddha. If you're a stream winner and had a bit of jhanas, and when you die, it's quite obvious what will happen. You know, the nimitta comes up, you know exactly what to do. You just let go into the nimitta. Get into a jhana realm. Because you know that even that's not you, nothing to do with you. But you've let go of the hard one, the body and the five senses. Letting go of the mind is pretty easy once you've let go of the body and the five senses. So refined, it's not heavy, it's just not coarse. So the person who's been a stream winner, who gets a jhana, and dies, and can attain that jhana state in their death, can actually let go and allow that light just to stay and merge. because we were born in the jhana realm. And by that, still, it's weird to understand this, but it's true, a constant perception for hundreds, thousands of years, of human years. Absolutely blissed out for such a long time. When the whole thing falls apart, there's nothing left at all. The jhana anagami, the non-returner, the Aryan who's had jhanas, never comes back anywhere. It's a nice way to go out. Of course, the Buddha said he doesn't praise any type of existence. But if you're going to praise any type of existence, you know, that's, you know, not that bad. Because it's not going to lead to any rebirth at all. Samsara is stuffed, and you go out with a bliss. So you can understand why this happens, and you can understand how you can actually deal with your death now by doing these things. You can also understand just how samsara ends. Don't think that you can become enlightened, you can become awake and end samsara just through an act of will. You can't stop these five senses now and let go of the body. It's going to be tough when you die. So how can you become enlightened and sort of stop samsara? Understanding and the connection between the jhanas and the time of death is just so obvious to, you know, to myself, that there's no way that a person can sort of end samsara without experience of jhanas. They just don't know how to let go. They can't do it now. How the heck they're going to do it when they die? Very, very unlikely. So the practice of meditation, the practice of letting go, disengaging, allowing things to disappear, seeing these things don't belong to you, they're not made up of a self, they can just vanish. Whatever is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. It can't be mine. It can't be a self. And it ceases not when I want it to. It ceases according to cause and effect, according to nature. It's out of my control. So we let go. We realize that all this controlling is completely impossible. It just creates more problems. It doesn't achieve anything. It promises something, but it never reaches that promise. It can't. It's impossible when you see it. Because of that, you just let go of a whole lot. And it's through that letting go of the five khandhas, through that letting go of the six senses, through that letting go of the body and its five senses, stepping stones from breath into nimitta, nimitta into jhanas, and jhanas into nothing at all. Stepping stones across the river. Unless one has seen that, one always gets reborn, and reborn in some stupid places. So it's important to get this together. To be able to cross that stream, I wanted to introduce also just how just the letting go works. Because crossing that stream is craving. It's made up of craving. It flows according to craving. Craving makes the world. You might say that craving is the world. Because it creates it. It's that craving, the inability to let go, to allow things to disappear. Independent origination, as I was saying last week, craving creates the fuel, which creates the rebirth process. Or craving, you might call it karma formations, which creates consciousness. This is why last week I said, the less one craves, the more one lets go, the less one does, the less world one creates. You can understand that. What world do you live in? It's a world of books, a world of fantasies, a world of anger, a world of creating. Where does that come from? Your world originates from your craving, the way the mind inclines. And the more solid that world is, the more you've craved, and the harder it is to let it go. And go in the opposite direction. of subduing the craving, letting go of the doer, renouncing, surrendering, just being peaceful, making peace. Craving stops. And the world stops with it. The solidity of your fantasies, your dreams, your memories, the solidity of your ideas starts to vaporize. Or, the word they use in Pali, viraga, starts to fade away. All the solid ground on which one stood, all the frameworks of experience which you measure and judge your life by, starts to fall apart. Solid walls melt like hot chocolate. The things which one relied upon, one sees, is just full of holes. Not solid anymore, but wobbly like jelly. All of your perceptions and thoughts are just like that. Just like this wobbly jelly. They're not solid after all. The whole world falls apart. It's called viraga, the fading away of things. With the lessening of craving, the world is no longer so solid, so firm, a place where you can roost on the anālaya. The more we crave, the more solid the world becomes. The more solid the perception of time, the more solid our bodies and our ideas, and the more solid our ideas of anger and wanting and greed, lust. When these things fade away, the world fades. As these things fade away, the river separating you from the far shore also fades away. Sometimes people wonder, how can one cross from this side to the other side when there's a raging stream between you? Remember, as a layperson, going up to the very north of Nepal, wondering whether you can cross into China. You didn't have a visa, but there's only like a river between you and into Tibet. Trouble is, the river was raging. If you just try to even wade it, you get swept downstream and probably killed. That's why they didn't need fences on that border. No border guards. But the river was in so fierce, no way you could get across. That's sometimes what it's like for you. The idea of getting across to the other side, to ending suffering, attaining nirvana. You look and the river is raging. What do sometimes people do? They try and get strong and say, I'm going to really get some energy going so I can actually swim across. Or I'll build a bridge or even get a raft. Like the Buddha said, but be careful. I'm going to go against that Buddha simile now. Because the right way to go across is to allow that stream to dry up. To wait until the river is not in flood anymore. To turn off the tap, the spring, from which that river flows. The spring is the delusion of self. The river is the river of craving. And because of the way I've been teaching here for the last few years, the more one lets go, the more one stops doing, you'll find that the river starts flowing less and less strong. In fact, not only does the current decrease, but the width lessens. There's less water there. You're trying to cross the river of craving. Something you can't do by jumping across. You cross the river by allowing it to dry up. Until there's no craving left. When craving stops, so does the river. It dries up. And as soon as the river dries up, I said to someone earlier this week, as soon as there's no more river, there's no difference between this side and the next side. There's no separation anymore. You're across. You're across by ending craving. By stopping the river, the stream of of consciousness which is generated by wanting, by doing, by craving. This is how enlightenment happens. Not by making more craving. If you crave to be enlightened, if you crave to get into jhanas, if you crave to do this and do that, that river gets wider, deeper, and more fierce. You should know that by now. You've been practicing long enough. If you stop the craving, the river becomes a little brook. Maybe if you're quick enough, you can jump over. But the best way is allow the whole river to dry up. This side, that side. How can it be two sides when there's no river in between? That's the experience of enlightenment. So, the death meditation gives us the urgency to really get this together while we have the chance. The death meditation makes it so important to stop carrying this stupid lay stuff, you know, you monks, around with you. You're monks, you're disciples of the Buddha. You should never sort of have any anger and ill will, at least not express it, and no lust or whatever, that sort of ridiculous stuff. You know, you're monks, disciples of the Buddha. So, and act like it. And get it, your act together now, while you have the chance. Who knows when a lump of concrete's going to fall on you. Or you're going back to your hut and a tree falls on you. Or you've got some sort of heart attack or whatever else is going on your body. Now you're always on the edge, like in Greek mythology, the sword of Damocles, hanging on a thread right over you. And that's with each one of you. Death is like that. You can just drop at any moment. So, make that a sense of urgency, just to not hold on to stupid things. Because if you do, and you die, you're in big trouble. And that's pain, big time. And the same when you're meditating, understand how to let go of this body and these five senses. Train, because you're going to die soon. It's going to happen. It's one thing you can be sure of. So here is the training. You've got this opportunity in a good monastery, great support, quiet places. Get it together now. While you have the opportunity and time, who knows when it can come back again. And even go deeper, so you can end samsara completely and get enlightened, have an end of this, by learning how to completely abandon, let go of the five senses in the body, to stop the stream which divides you from freedom, by really letting go full on. So that's the talk this evening. On death.
Sukhati Pano.